Blog Talk Radio.
Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. It's the beginning of another week here in the hot, oppressive heat of summer here where I live in Florissant, Missouri. Wonder how you're feeling where you're at. Are you under the dome of heat like us too? Well, pull up that big, large glass of lemonade right now and join me for the next hour and a half. Today on The Cross in the Desert, I'm going to explore a very important biblical theme in the first half an hour, the theme of God's unconditional love for us. And it's a theme that would take hours to talk about, but I'm going to try to capture it in the first half an hour. Then I will finish reading from my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. That's right, we are almost finished our live audiobook reading of my book, and it's just amazing. Every day, almost, I get a picture from someone across the world who has started reading my book, and they have a picture of it. They're holding it in their hand, and they have been so kind to put it on my timeline or send it to me in a message. And I want to say thank you so much, Palmina from Sweden. You are the latest picture. And thank you so much for reading Rahane and giving a voice to her where you live in Sweden. Also, in the last half an hour, I have a very special guest. My wife, Becky Noble, will join me. We are going to discuss the recent departure from Great Britain from the European Union, that dramatic departure this past weekend, and the ramifications that will have for us here in the United States. What was the reason, and was that a good move, and what are the ramifications? We're going to discuss that with my wife in the last half an hour. So I want to begin today just talking to you about a subject that is absolutely critical. We live in a world of radical hatred. I don't have to paint you a picture. You listen and watch the news every day just like me. You see the terrorism, the hatred, the destruction, the violence, the death. And you ask yourself, what on earth is happening on my planet? What is going on with humanity? Well, I want to help you today understand this subject a little bit better from a biblical standpoint, in that I believe the solution to radical hatred is radical love, and it's the radical love of God. Before we talk about this very important subject, I want to talk to you about a man, Kamal Saleem. Kamal Saleem was full of radical hate, and he had come here to the United States and to further the cause of radical Islam with killing Christians and Jews and infidels. I want you to hear his testimony of how radical love destroyed the radical hate in his heart. Let's listen.
48% of the Muslims in the United States of America believe that they are Muslim first, they're American second. Our purpose is to change this culture because they're infidel, and what they're doing is not pleasing to Allah, and we are the soldier of Allah who will make them do it.
Kamal Saleem was born in Lebanon to a devout Muslim family. As early as 4 years old, he remembers sitting at the kitchen table while his mother taught him about the Quran and his duty to Allah and jihad.
From my childhood, my mom said, "One day you'll be a martyr, my son. You will die for the sake of Allah and you will exalt Islam." She said, "If you kill a Jew, my son, well, your hand will light up before the throne of Allah, and the host of heaven will celebrate what you have done."
Kamal was seven when his parents sent him to Muslim training camps to learn to use weapons and engage and kill the enemy. The boys were also taught another, more subtle form of warfare.
We were training for what's called culture jihad, which is shifting cultures. Culture jihad is, it's unlike the sword, unlike the rifle, it is the jihad that will come into your world.
By his 20s, Kamal was chosen to wage cultural jihad on America.
In Islam, liberty, freedom, monarchy, all these are idols, and these must be brought down. So the liberty that you have in the United States of America, it's anti-Islam. You know, so America must be changed. So I moved to the Bible Belt specifically. The Bible Belt was the strongest of strongest. That's where the stout Christians are. And I want to take on the best of the best because I considered myself as a sword of Islam. I thought I'm anointed, I'm unique, I'm selected. I'm coming to a country and a culture to change it, and I have the power of Allah with me.
In the early 1980s, Kamal entrenched himself in a small Midwestern town. He began targeting men from poorer neighborhoods to recruit them to the Muslim faith. But one afternoon, his life would be in the hands of those he hated the most.
I was going from one place to another to do a recruitment, and that day I had a car wreck. The car wreck was so severe, I ejected out of my car, landed on my neck, broke my neck in two places. This man came running to me, and he said, "Don't worry, we're going to take care of you, and everything's going to be all right." The ambulance came and picked me up. And now I go to the hospital, the orthopedic surgeon in the emergency room looked at my chart and he just said, "Son, we are going to take care of you and everything's going to be all right." The second day I wake up in the hospital and this head of physical therapy, come and read my chart. And he turned around and he said the same thing word for word, "We are going to take care of you."
At first, Kamal was frightened by their words because these men were all Christians.
You see, in terrorism, if they said, "We're going to take care of you," you'd better run.
Surgeries to repair Kamal's broken neck were successful, but recovery would take weeks. After being discharged from the hospital, he would need someone to care for him while he recuperated. Kamal had no one. So the orthopedic surgeon opened up his own home to this stranger.
In his home, they put me in the choicest room, in the most beautiful thing. I became like part of their family. They didn't see me any different. And now they have a basket set for Kamal. They put in money to free my bills from the hospital.
Kamal was overwhelmed with the outpouring of Christian love. As he recovered, he began to help out around the house with cooking and cleaning.
They have Jewish friends that came from Israel that they support, you know. And now I'm hugging Israelis and I'm cooking for Jews. I go, "What has happened to me?"
When Kamal was able to take care of himself and return to his apartment, the doctor had another surprise for him.
He said, "This is the keys to the house, and here's an extra key. This is your new car. We just want to bless you. You can come anytime you want." So I go to my home, And I go to my cold place that I haven't been there in months, and dust is this thick. And I just got to settle this issue with my God to know that if it's real or not. So I walk inside, I shut the door, I go right in the eastern window, and I fall on my knees, and I put my hands to the heavens, and I cry up to my God. Allah, Allah, my Lord and my King, why have you done such a thing to me? I'm okay with the car wreck. I'm okay with all this, but why did you put me among Christians? I'm confused. These Christians and Jews, they're good people. There's nothing wrong with them. They don't want to kill us. They're not the same thing that I learned about them. Allah, these people have relationship with their God. These people, they cry out to the God and they answer them. I want to hear your voice. I want to hear you love me. If you're real, speak to me. I want to hear your voice. Guess what Allah said that day? Absolutely nothing.
Kamal felt that because he questioned his faith, the honorable thing to do was to end his own life.
So I went to reach out my guns and put it in the right place and clock out. I heard the voice. The voice knew me by name. He said, Kamal, Kamal, Kamal. Why don't you call on God of Father Abraham and Isaac and Jacob? And now I fell on my knees and I put my hands to the heavens immediately as I heard the voice. And I cried out with every fiber within me, God the Father Abraham, if you are real, would you speak to me? God the Father Abraham, if you are real, I want to know you. Well, God the Father Abraham came to the room and he filled the room with his glory. And his name was Yahweh. The Lord is one. In his hand, he has holes in his hand. He has holes in his feet. His name is Jesus. I said to him, who are you, my Lord? Who are you? He said, I am that I am. I said, I'm a simple man with a simple mind. What is that supposed to mean? He said, I am the Alpha. I am the Omega. I am the beginning. I am the end. I am everything that is in between. I have known you before I formed the foundation of the earth. I have loved you before I formed you in your mother womb. Rise up. Rise up, Kamal. Kum. You are my warrior. You are not their warrior. And I said to him, I said, my Lord, I will live and die for you. He said, do not die for me. I died for you that you may live.
That day, instead of taking his life, Kamal gave it to Jesus. He now has a new mission and travels the country challenging Muslims to question their allegiance to Allah.
My heart desire is to reach out for my brothers and sisters, the Muslim out there, 1.5 billion Muslim, that they are living out there and they have not tasted freedom and that freedom in God.
It's been over 20 years since Kamal left the Islamic faith, and even threats of violence and death cannot stop him from sharing his story.
He is real. You know, and if you never experienced God before in your life, if you never tasted God, and if you think you got nothing to lose, when you're sitting in your home, whether you're a Muslim or a non-Muslim or a non-Christian or whatever you are, say, call on God of Father Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and say, if you are real, speak to me, I want to hear your voice.
This is an incredible story. This is a man who was hell-bent on killing in the name of Allah to kill Christians, Jews, and infidels, and a car wreck changed his entire life. He was thrust into a home of Christians, and he could not deny their faith, but most importantly, how they radiated the love of Christ. And this man was ready to take his own life because Allah, if you will, stopped speaking to him. And then one day the voice told him, I am Yahweh. I am Jesus. This is radical love, and radical love destroys radical hate. That's what I want to talk to you a little bit about this morning. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 3 in the New Living Translation is a beautiful statement of what Kamal experienced. Long ago, the Lord said to Israel, quote, I have loved you, my people, with an everlasting love, with unfailing love. I have drawn you to myself. Listen to what God is saying. You'll never find a statement like that ever in the Quran, but in the Bible, it's right there for you. I have loved you. It means past tense. It means I've always loved you. Since the foundation of the worlds, I have loved you. With an everlasting love, it means a love that will not end. And that's the love that Kamal Saleem experienced. With unfailing love, I have drawn you to myself. You know, the Apostle Paul, in the New Testament, Ephesians chapter 3, verse 18, had a prayer for us as Christians. He says, "And may you have the power to understand, as all God's people should, how wide, how long, how high, and how deep his love is." Think about that. It's like an ocean. You can never experience the total love of God. Now, God's chief attribute is love. But his love is also a holy love. It's also a just love. So we know there are many other attributes that comprise who God is, but that chief ruling attribute is the attribute of love. One of the marks of a believing Christian is having that love, the love that those Christians had for Kamal. And I want to read to you from the Bible in 1 John chapter 4. This is so important. If you listen and you've never heard this, and this is the first time you're hearing this, just know that God wants you to understand just the depth, the height, and the width of his love, and how that love is the most important attribute in the life of a Christian. Dear friends, let us love one another. For love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. And this is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. This is a beautiful statement of who God is, because John says God is love. And here's the reason we can know that God's love is true. He did something. Love is action. Love is not just mere words, and love is not just mere sentimental wish things. God is an active verb. Love is an active verb. If it's true love, it will do something. And true love did something for us 2,000 years ago. True love put himself on a cross and took our judgment and our sin and forgave us and cleansed us. That's true love, because John says he loved us first and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. God showed his love among us. He sent his Son from heaven to be our Savior, because that's who God is. God is love. And when you think about it, you know, you read about it, you hear about it, relationships come and go. They claim to love one another, but that love wanes, that love dies, and love is imperfect. And many, many hearts have been broken over a false love. But the Bible says God's love is unfailing. It is a true love that cannot fail. It is a love without conditions. And our text reading this morning says that not that we loved God, but that he loved us first. And then he demonstrated what love was by dying on the cross for our sins and rising again. This is the message that Muslims are thirsty and hungry for. This is the message that Iranians meet in house churches and they're hungry and thirsty for. Why? Because all around them, they are surrounded with the oppression and the hatred of Islam. And Christians are, and Iranians are hungry and thirsty for something better, for something that will change their lives and give them peace and meaning and hope. And so they find the message of Christ, and they find the message of love, and they never go back again. Iranians will meet secretly in house churches because they've been transformed by the love of God. Muslims, by the thousands, leave Islam because they have met the God of love and the God of peace that they never knew before. And this is the message this morning that I want to impress upon your heart. It's a personal message. Remember what I read to you? I have loved you, my people, with an everlasting love. God said this to a people, his covenant people, who were chasing after false gods, who had fallen into idolatry, going their own way. And God had every right to disconnect his love from them, but he chose not to. He chose to keep loving them. You see, in the Quran, it says that Allah does not love the transgressor. Allah only loves those who will love him. It's a conditional love. But here we see that God has a love even for wayward people, people who have strayed away. What a difference between the Bible and the Quran. We see the difference is really one word, and that is love. You know, about 48, 49 years ago, on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album, the Beatles wrote a song about all you need is love. Well, they were on the right track, because that's what the human soul craves today for. And of course, like I mentioned, there are relationships. It's a temporary love. It's a love when it's tested is not genuine. It falls away. But the love of God is so much different. The love of God is a committed love. And the Bible says it's an everlasting love. It's an unfailing love. And remember what I read to you? It's the kind of love that is wide and long and high and deep. It's a true love. And many, many years ago, God demonstrated his love toward us in that while we were sinners, that is lawbreakers, Christ died for us. He made a statement, a commitment of love for us. Well, today, if you have never experienced the love that I'm talking about, you can. All you have to do is talk to God like Kamal said. Ask him to reveal himself to you, to show him and show you his truth. And I know he will, because God is faithful to answer the prayer of a hungry and a thirsty heart. I want you to hear this song right now by Chris Tomlin. It's a song that talks about everything I've shared with you this morning. Here's Mercy on the Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
God, you have done great things. God, you give grace to the weak and bless the broken hearted with a song of praise to sing. You reached down and lifted us up. You came running, looking for us. And now there's nothing and no one beyond your love. You're the overflow. You're the fountain of
Some music of Chris Tomlin, and Chris is just really describing what I finished sharing with you from God's Word, that mercy, that love that is so high, so deep, so wide, it is incomprehensible, and it is a love relationship. That's what Christianity really is. I can't believe it. Today we are concluding our live audiobook reading of Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, and I want to start right away. So we can finish today. We are concluding today with chapter 12. It's called and entitled The Birthday Party. Kota, Kota, Rahan, Rahan. The chilling, agonizing screams of Sholay Pakravan shattered the cold morning air of Saturday, October 25th, 2014. Sholay was sitting inside of a van parked out of Rajay Shahar prison. She had just received the devastating news that Rahane was dead. All evening, Sholay had been driving aimlessly in circles to find the right prison where Rahane had been taken to. She had been forbidden to attend the execution because of holding a protest outside of Sharai Ray prison in September. This morning, her soul had been ripped from her body. Rahane was dead. And her world had been shattered into pieces. Some of her close friends had videotaped Sholay sitting in the van shortly after receiving the agonizing news, and her screams were now being heard all over the world of the internet. Her hopes for a last-minute forgiveness had been crushed. Sholay now swore that she would never forgive Jalal Sarbandi as long as she lived. The day that Sholay dreaded had finally arrived, burial day. She stood with her sister, Aunt Nafis, outside of the building where the corpses were washed and wrapped in their grave clothes. Today she felt as though a heavy ton of weight were lying on her chest. Her legs were so weak that she could barely walk. Feridun was late. She was panicking. Sholay gazed up at the board on the building. When the dead body was ready to be delivered to the family for burial, there would be a posted announcement. Aunt Nafis had grown impatient. She had decided to go ahead to Rahane's grave and begin reciting prayers from the Quran. As soon as she arrived at Rahane's grave, she noticed that the ambulance was already there. Aunt Nafis had suspected that they were planning to secretly bury Rahane without notifying the family, in order to avoid a large media turnout that would involve into a protest. "I won't let you open the doors of the ambulance before Rahane's father and grandmother arrives," Aunt Nafis warned the drivers. Quickly, Aunt Nafis called Sholay on her cell phone and told her the news. The guards began to open the doors and allowed Aunt Nafis to cover Rahane's body with a net because she had not been married. Within a few moments, Sholay arrived, out of breath from walking a long distance. Rahane had been wrapped in a kufan, a large bedcloth that covered her body from head to toe. Sholi quietly asked the ambulance driver if she would be allowed to see Rahane's face. The driver agreed on the condition that she did not make an emotional scene. Sholi carefully peeled back the bedcloth and exposed Rahane's face. She covered her mouth with her hand in astonishment, filled her eyes. She was unprepared for what she would see. Rahane's face appeared like a flower, like a bud opening up before her eyes. Her eyes were closed. Sholi stood quietly and completely still. She noticed a mark on Rahane's forehead. It was a square-shaped prayer mark that was made out of soil and water. The mark was worn by most Muslims during prayer when they would bow their head to the floor. The ones who had washed and prepared Rahane's body had put the mark on her forehead to give her favor in the afterlife on Judgment Day. Sholi couldn't stop staring at the soft, peaceful-looking face of her Rehan. She gently touched her cheeks. Her skin was so bright and beautiful-looking. Sholi noticed that there were two bunches of her hair curled up and placed next to her cheeks. Sholi leaned closer and gently rubbed her face with her hand. Then she leaned over and softly kissed her forehead. The feeling of her lips touching Rahane's forehead was overwhelming. Sholi's knees began to feel weak. Tears streamed down her face. "I wish I could have died for you," Sholi softly said, her voice cracking with emotion. Rahane's face seemed to glow like the moon, radiating the color of a jasmine flower. Sholi didn't want to leave. Her whole body felt numb. She wanted to stay and hold her daughter and never let her go. Suddenly, the voices of the ambulance driver quarreling with her family jolted Sholi back into reality. The last precious moments with Rahane had been rudely interrupted. Sholi's heart had been pierced by the sword of injustice, and she would never be the same again. The news of Rahane's execution had shocked and devastated her supporters all over the world, especially Nazanin Afshin Jam, who had dedicated a campaign to save her from execution. Nazanin issued an official statement the next day condemning the unjust execution. Quote, "I am absolutely devastated. Despite over 200,000 signatures on our petition, and international pressure from leading countries, media coverage, and most importantly, massive pressure from inside Iran, I am sad to report that Rahane Jabari was executed hours ago. Why? She stabbed a man in self-defense that plotted to rape her. The Sarbandi family and the Iranian regime now have more blood on their hands. The Sarbandi family admitted that there was not yet enough evidence and investigation from the incident, and yet they asked for the execution to take place anyway. The Iranian regime has wiped its hands clean from responsibility, claiming it was a matter between families. Facts. 1. Morteza Sarbandi was a stranger to Rahane. He overheard her speaking on the phone and learned that she was an interior designer. He solicited her help to help with renovations of his home. The day she went to inspect Sarbandi's home, he bought condoms and put sedative drugs in her drink. He attempted to rape her. She stabbed him and fled the scene. There was another man connected to Sarbandi that was present in the building while the incident took place and shortly after the stabbing, but he was not incorporated in the investigation. Question. What motive does a healthy, sane, 19-year-old interior designer have to kill a man that was a complete stranger to her? Why was she not given a proper trial? Is the fact that Morteza Sarbandi used to be part of Iran's intelligence ministry have anything to do with the rush to execute her? I hope one day Rahane's mother, Sholi Pakravan, gets some answers. From now, I only wish to give her my heartfelt condolences. Nothing on this planet is more painful that losing a child, and in such a horrific way. May you rest in peace, dear Rahane. May you find solace, dear Sholeh. I pray to God that this regime falls and a free, democratic Iran prevails where the rule of law exists and a new constitution based on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is enacted. Rouhani's execution once again proves that this regime is not reformable. Down with the Islamic Republic of Iran. A father broken over the unjust death of his precious daughter wrote a tearful letter just 7 days after the execution. Quote, "Now you are in the hands of God who has made you well known and put your love into the hearts of people. God put you on his hands and took you up to his throne. Everything is arranged by God. It is he who gives human dignity. It is God who can put someone's love in people's heart. 7 days have passed since I could not drive from Shahr-e-Rei prison. 7 days passed since my eyes were filled with tears. In our last visit, that Friday afternoon, you whispered in my ears, 'I will never see you again. Forgiveness does not exist in the dictionary of my plaintiffs. Take care of mommy and the girls.'" A mother devastated over her father's death, over her daughter's death, Sholeh wrote a powerful tribute to Rehane. Quote, "Rehane lived for 26 years, but she taught me and others the deep meaning of life. Life means fidelity to human virtues and challenging anything that turn a man into a selfish man, a liar, and a bully. I am a mother who learned from my child that it is possible to be free in captivity. It is possible to be brave in prison and under torture. It is possible to be a human being in the worst circumstances and grant others happiness. It is possible to be the beautiful fragrance of life with the noose around the neck. She taught me that death is not the end of life, and I must adhere, taught me that the holiest notion in the world is a life based on the truth. I thank her to the end of my life for selecting me for motherhood, for growing inside of my being. I kiss her kind eyes that changed my view towards life. I kiss her generous fingers that taught me to offer sincerely what I have. I must always look for freedom, and I must fight a good battle for the freedom of others. I kiss her strong legs that taught me not to fear and not to tremble under any circumstances. She taught me to walk towards a free future with strong steps. Thanks to her for all of her lessons, I will not give up seeking justice for her blood that was shed unjustly as long as I am alive, even if I lose my life for this goal." Reza Pahlavi, the son of the former Shah of Iran and president of the National Council of Iran, wrote a powerful letter defending the unjust execution of Rehane. Quote, "Today a father writes to you, a father who has tried his best in life to make his daughter's dreams come true, like you parents who have tried their best to help you achieve your desires. A few years ago, when I heard you were arrested, I asked the reason. You had claimed that a man, a former intelligence agent, had abused your honor, and in self-defense, you killed him unwillingly. We let the time pass to reveal the truth. Rehane, the years when you were passing your youth behind bars, we were observing your growth. During all of those years, you never changed your claim and even preferred death to life. There are only a few people who did not ignore their honor to escape death. Many people would have chosen to compromise their honor to escape death, but you didn't. Today, in the dawn, you brought justice in the country where its leaders' injustice smell in every part of society. I commend you for your strength and courage. I commend you for your great honor and dignity. I heard your last message. You told the story of your life very beautifully. Death is not the end of life, you said. Rehane, your murder, another stain on the shameful record of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I wish peace for your great mother, Sholi Pakraman, who was worried that you had a fever. Your parents are and will always be proud of you, and all of us Iranians will together light a candle to remember you. We will remember you forever in our memories. Rahane, you will always live in our hearts. On Thursday, November 6th, 2014, family members and friends gathered at Sholi Pakraman's tiny apartment to celebrate what would have been Rahane's 27th birthday. Came together to celebrate and commemorate Rahane's brief life that had been cut short by an evil and corrupt regime. It had only been 12 days since the execution. Sholi's little apartment was filled with every type of flower, from roses to carnations to jasmine, even one plant that was proudly named, quote, Rahane's flower. A large banner with a beautiful color picture of Rahane testifying in court dangled from the ceiling, trimmed on each side with red, green, and yellow balloons. There were pictures and portraits of Rahane as a young girl and university student placed on tables and hanging on the walls. The apartment was filled with the presence of Rahane and a special celebration of her very short life. Sholi had purchased a large cake with a picture of Rahane in the center of it. The cake was decorated with 27 bright yellow burning candles. The birthday celebration was not restricted to only Rahane's home. Sholi had posted a special invitation on Facebook asking all of Rahane's supporters to light a candle and post a picture in honor of her birthday. Thousands of people from all over the world, picture of Rahane and a candle in commemoration of her life. Each of the guests in Sholi's apartment were given a candle to hold in their hands. The lights were dimmed and each candle was lit. Mohammed Pakraman, Sholi's cousin, gently played a special song in his guitar dedicated to Rahane as the bright candles illuminated the darkness in a very emotional tribute. Sholi gazed down at the picture of Rahane on her birthday cake. She was overwhelmed with so many memories. Her hand was trembling as she cut the cake. Fairy Dune put his arm around Sholi to comfort her in the midst of her sorrow and pain. While Muhammad continued playing his special song, the room was suddenly filled with the glow of many candles, chasing away the darkness, blaze of light. Everyone's heart was heavy with grief and pain, and yet for a few precious moments, their sadness melted away in the glow of the candlelights. It was obvious that Rahane was there among them. She was present at her birthday party after all. Her beautiful fragrance filled the room as family members and friends held their candles high in the air and remember how their lives had been impacted by her. Rahane's courage, love, and beauty permeated the room with a glorious presence, chasing away the painful darkness for a few brief moments. The evil regime had not won. Rahane's love had conquered their evil schemes, and tonight, at her birthday party, the beautiful fragrance was there with them in spirit. Love had won, and death had lost. Rahane would live on forever in their hearts by the power of her indestructible love. Some final thoughts. Writing this book has been an incredible and painful journey for me. I am very grateful for the courage of Rahane's beautiful family for taking the time to share their very painful memories with me so that this book could become a reality. A very special thanks to Shadi Pave, one of the principal translators of Rahane's prison letters, for giving me permission to adapt her letters for the storyline of my book. A remarkable event took place nearly 1 year later after Rahane's execution. In October 25th, best friend Sahar was pardoned. Sahar's family went through an intense struggle, but were finally able to raise the blood money necessary for her release. Shortly after her release, Sahar met with Sholeh for a tearful reunion in her home. I want to end this remarkable journey by sharing with you the blog that I wrote about Rahane's unjust execution just a few hours after it happened. It was one of the most painful and emotional blogs that I have ever written. It is fitting that I share this with you, the reader, at the end of a long and most difficult journey. Kodas, Koda, Farsi for God, God. Rehan, Rehan. For as long as I live, I will never forget the agonizing and gut-wrenching cries of Sholeh Pakravan as she received the tragic news of her daughter's execution. I was quietly praying for Rehane inside of the chapel at work during my break time. It was 9 p.m. on a Friday evening in St. Louis, Missouri, and approximately 6:30 a.m. in Tehran, Iran. Dawn had just broken over Rahashar prison, and despite international outcry and a petition containing over 200,000 signatures, the Iranian killing machine hanged 26-year-old Rahane Jabari, an innocent martyr, for the crime of self-defense. No doubt, the final words of her daughter were racing through Sholeh's mind at that agonizing moment, quote, "I love you. I wish I could have hugged you until I died," end quote. I had been in the middle of praying when I discovered this haunting video on my cell phone. I stopped for just a moment, and as I watched dear Sholeh in agony, I wept and pleaded for God for his mercy. I remembered the words of Rahane on one of her letters from prison, in which she cried out for someone to listen to her and be her voice, quote, "Perhaps someone in this world would hear my cries and feel my pain." At that unforgettable moment in the prayer chapel at work, I truly connected with both Rahane and Sholeh. I felt their pain. I was gripped by their suffering and agony. Indeed, I heard their cries, and it is a moment that I will never forget for the rest of my life. The day that this brutal and unforgiving regime hanged Rahane and thrust the sword of injustice through her mother's heart was only 11 days until her 27th birthday. For 7 agonizing years, Rahane had suffered in prison for the stabbing death of Morteza Sarbandi, a former intelligence agent who had lured her to his apartment to do some interior designing work and then there tried to rape her. From the age of 19 until her unjust death at the age of 26, Rahane had never experienced a normal adult life. Quote, "The world allowed me to live for 19 years, Rahane wrote in her prison letter part 1. "I want them to know what happened to me at the age of 19 that has made me no longer fear death." For Rahane, her life had stopped. Her life ended at 19 when she was thrust into the grave of Evin prison. Yet in spite of her suffering, Rahane cried out to the world through her prison letters, which became her voice to anyone who would listen to her cause, to her side of the story of what really happened. With a hanging rope in front of my eyes, "I want to tell you everything that I said in court, everything that I screamed while I was brutally kicked by 4 forceful interrogators who regarded themselves as almighty. Perhaps someone in this world would hear my cries and feel my pain." For more than 6 months, I heard the cries and felt the pain of Rahane. My Facebook page was filled with petitions and stories about her plight. I wrote a blog about her entitled, "The Crime of Self-Defense," and pleaded with listeners on my radio program to be a voice for Rahane, save her life, and sign the petition for her freedom. For 1 month before her execution, I paused from work at break time and went to the chapel and prayed for her. I was confident that God heard the cries of the oppressed and suffering and that he would deliver Rahane. It was only an hour after watching an agonizing video in the chapel that I received the tragic news that Rahane had been executed. I paused from my work at the hospital and found a quiet place and went to my Facebook page on the cell phone. With tears streaming to my face, I wrote the following post to my friends. With sadness and brokenness, I have to report that our dear Rahane was executed just a few minutes ago. I am truly broken, and yet there is a part of me that is rejoicing because now Rahane is finally safe at home in the arms of Jesus. Death no longer has power over her. The Iranian regime has lost. They can no longer hurt her. Jesus had the final word. Rahane, we love you and we will miss you, but one day soon we will see you again at the great banquet table in heaven. This is a promise. Jesus had the final word, not the cruel and barbaric Iranian regime. During his suffering for his Christian faith on the island of Patmos, the Apostle John had an incredible vision of Jesus that encouraged him in the midst of his dark trial. John fell down in worship as Jesus laid his right hand upon him, quote, "Fear not, I am the first and last, and the living one. I died, and behold, I'm alive forevermore, and I have the keys of death and Hades." Revelation chapter 1, verses 17 through 18. This is a powerful and comforting claim from the one who had conquered death, hell, and the grave. Jesus is the sovereign Lord over life and death. As the final word, which means at the moment of our death, we are safe and secure in his arms of love. As I pondered this scripture, I was comforted by the fact that Rahane was finally free from the grave of her prison and had been ushered into the arms of a loving Savior. Jesus holds the keys of death and Hades. He has the final word. The many cruel years of torture and injustice had finally come to an end for our dear Rahane. There were moments of frustration and sadness for me that God had not spared her life. And yet, I realize that he had indeed delivered her and answered my prayers. It was just 10 days until her birthday. For the past 6 years, Rahane had spent her birthday behind the bars of a dark in cruel prison. However, this year, on her 27th birthday, she would finally be free. And thus ends the reading of my book, Rahane, Beautiful Fragrance. And I want to thank everyone from the bottom of my heart for joining me on this very, very special 4-month reading of this book. It has been a pleasure to share with you from the depths of my heart what Rahane's life meant to me. It has been a very remarkable journey, a very sad, a very painful journey, because I think every day about her family, Sholeh and Feridun and Shahzad and Shari, always in my thoughts and prayers. But I'm so grateful that the Lord has blessed this book to continents, to cultures, to media outlets, Sweden, Germany, Britain, and Australia. And I'm blessed with the pictures of those that have read the book. They share with me a picture of them holding the book. I've posted it on my Facebook page. And my prayer is that every culture, every media outlet will hear Rahane's voice. Because that is my dream, that is my prayer, that is my goal. Not my voice, her voice. That's very important to me. This is not fame and fortune, this is about Rahane. And it always will be about Rahane. And because that is my goal. And there are so many women in Iran, just like Rahane, whose stories need to be told. They need to be heard. And Rahane is that representative for all Iranian women who are unjustly imprisoned, unjustly persecuted every single day. I know I have Iranian friends I speak with a lot, sometimes on chat, sometimes on Skype, and they live right here. And they're forever grateful for having a land of freedom and hope. But these friends I'm speaking to you about have never forgotten their Iranian friends. I'm thinking of one friend right now who joins us today. Her name is Shirin, and thank you, Shirin, for being the voice for Iranians who need freedom. Thank you for the work that you do, for the hard labor that you commit for your people in Iran. It is very beautiful to see Iranians that come here to live and have never forgotten their people. And this book has been a labor of love for the Iranian people. And it is my prayer that the Iranian people, through this book, will find their hope in Christ, will find that freedom that they're searching for. As long as I have a computer, as long as I have breath, I promise to be their voice. I promise to speak for them, to post on my page for them, because I will never be happy and satisfied until they can walk down the streets of Tehran without fear. I believe that the seeds of destruction for the overthrow of this regime are already growing. They're growing in the hearts of Iranian people. They're growing in the hearts of those Iranian people that have become Christians. You see, the seeds of destruction were in the Roman Empire, and it collapsed from within one day. John wrote about that in the book of Revelation. It's already happened. Rome fell. And the seeds of destruction inside the Iranian regime are growing. And one day soon, that regime will collapse. And there will be democracy. There will be freedom for Iran. God has promised it. Whatever a man will sow, he will reap. The sowing of the seeds of hate and oppression will reap death and destruction. Mark those words. The Iranian regime has sowed seeds of death, hatred, discrimination, and oppression. Those seeds will result in their utter destruction from within. And very soon, my Iranian friends will be free. It is a promise this regime will collapse from within. It is a promise that it will happen very, very soon. Just as Great Britain walked away from the European Union, the Iranian regime will soon walk away from a destructive regime. God has promised it, God has spoken, and God will bring it to pass. This is his promise, not mine. This is God's promise to every Iranian. In every country in the world, as a refugee looking for freedom, one day they will be able to return to their country and never have to suffer and never have to be oppressed ever again. God has promised this. Go and read Jeremiah 49. But most importantly, know that God is on the side of the oppressed and the suffering, and God will defend them. God will deliver them. And one day, very soon, Iranians will have a freedom they never dreamed of, a freedom physically and spiritually. It's going to happen. Iran is going to be free. And I hope that comforts you as I finished reading my book today. If you want to read this book, you can go up to Amazon.com. I have the links all over my page. I encourage you to do that because the proceeds from this book go to Alam Ministry, go to sending Bibles to Iran. And I hope that you will do that. And I hope that you will join me in being a voice for Rahane, all of suffering Iranians, every day. They need our thoughts. They need our prayers. They need our action. They need us to stand with them, not in just words, but in deed. To stand with them, to speak for them, to pray for them. I want to welcome right now to the Cross in the Desert my lovely, intelligent wife, Becky Noble. And welcome to the Cross in the Desert, Becky.
Hello. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Becky, it's a joy to have you on because we're going to talk about a very important subject today, the European Union and Great Britain. But before we get into that subject, inform our listeners a little bit about you. And tell them the good news that's going to happen very soon with your radio program.
Well, I write my own blog. It is called The Conservative Cauldron. You can find it at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. I also am a contributor for politichicks.com, and I do a radio show right here on Blog Talk Radio on Friday mornings at 11 a.m. Central Time, Conservative Cauldron Radio. And right now, conservativeradionetwork.com rebroadcasts my show at, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday afternoons. I'm sorry, 5 p.m. It just changed. 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Fridays, and then again at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturdays. Well, we are merging with another network, and the new network is going to be, we launch exactly 1 week from today. I'm super excited about it. It's going to be called Red Nation Rising Radio Network, and it's going to be, if not the largest conservative internet radio network in the nation, one of the largest. And so we're all really super excited, and I'm sure it's going to be a pretty busy week, but that's where you can find me.
That is amazing. You mentioned the largest blog talk radio circuit. So many programs are merging together to be a voice of conservatism, and this is a great event, and it couldn't happen on a better day, July 4th. What's that all
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely, July the 4th, Independence Day. It's a great, couldn't celebrate in a better way.
So you're excited. I'm excited for you because I think this is a great opportunity for your show to grow leaps and bounds, to gain more traffic. It's an opportunity for all of the shows combined to be a big voice of conservatism and a great time. The Republican National Convention is coming up in the month of July. What a great opportunity for this radio program network to grow at a strategic time.
I agree. I believe so. I think it's a great time for launch. There's going to be some amazingly talented people on this network, and I'm really humbled to be a part of it, to be around such talented people who are going to be on with me. But yeah, I'm really excited.
Who are some of those people that would people recognize their names? Share with us a few.
Kevin Jackson, his radio show will be on. Wayne Dupree. Don't know if there's a few maybe who I don't know if people are very familiar with them. If you listen to a lot of internet conservative radio, you might be. Behind Enemy Lines with Gene Berardelli. The Vito and Vito Show. The Stafford Voice with my good buddy from Kansas, Daniel Stafford. And just a whole bunch of other ones. There's so many. We are going to have two live streaming threads 24/7. So we've got a lot of people, different people, different people, different voices, but kind of a collective message, the same message.
That excellent. Well, I really look forward to that. I hope our listeners here on the Blog Talk circuit. By the way, Vito Esposito is right here in the chat room. I'm sure he's excited about that as well. And I think this is a great, great opportunity for a merging together of some of the best voices in conservative radio. Now, next Monday, pause for a few minutes and celebrate our independence from Great Britain, the Declaration of Independence. Just about 5 days ago, maybe a little bit less, there was a great independence that happened in Great Britain as the Great Britain people voted 52% to 48% to walk away for the European Union. Now, I know that all of us have heard this story, but Becky, how significant was this move of Great Britain to sever ties with the European Union?
It's very significant because basically what happened here is that Great Britain being part of the European Union, the head of the European Union is in Brussels. And basically what is going on when you are part of the European Union, if you are in a nation that is part of the European Union, you still have some sovereignty as a sovereign nation, but you are taking some direction from Brussels as part of the European Union. And Great Britain, the good people of Great Britain, our cousins across the pond, are just tired of somebody in another country telling them what to do. Because one of the things that is going on as part of their membership in the European Union, is that they are being forced to take a lot of these Middle Eastern immigrants from Syria, Iraq, Iran, you know, nations in that region of the world. And we've seen over and over and over again, all you have to do, if you go on British websites like the UK Daily Mail or The Guardian or The Independent, regardless of their political leanings, you can find at any given time they're going to talk about some sort of attack on a British citizen by a band of immigrants. And it's something that the British people are tired of. They're tired of having their society and their culture being taken over. And it really is, if you look at it very closely, it's very, very similar to what's going on here. A lot of the sentiment, I think, of the British people is very similar to what's going on here.
That is significant, because I think there is a parallel to what's happening in Great Britain, and I think it's going to spark many other countries to leave as well. But the parallel
is this.
The mess. Yeah, go ahead.
It is. In fact, I was perusing the Drudge Report for my own show prep this morning, and they are reporting that there are at least 8 other countries who are considering leaving the European Union. And granted, right now we're seeing all sorts of economic fallout from it. Most of the money people that I have seen over the weekend, either on TV, on the internet, what have you, a lot of them are saying that this was kind of, they expected this, if this referendum was passed, that they did expect to have some economic fallout, but they didn't think it was only temporary, that it's not going to last. And I am in no way a money expert, but I tend to agree that it's something that is probably a foreseen consequence of this, but it's going to correct itself and it's going to straighten out. So there are a lot of political implications, social implications, economic, just all kinds of different implications for this. And it really is kind of the best part about it, if you're a conservative, at least here in the United States, I think, is that it sends a huge message to globalists, people like Barack Obama, people like German Chancellor Angela Merkel, people, the open borders people, because one of the things about the European Union, and it probably is not talked about much, but a lot of the head honchos in the European Union would like to see a Europe with countries with no borders, where you just you know, you go about it. They want to make it, it's all part of a one world government kind of thing. And maybe that sounds kind of conspiracy theory-ish, but that's another thing that the British people wanted to keep intact, was the sovereign borders of their nation.
Exactly. When you mention the word borders, I think of Donald Trump and his promise to build a wall, and there is a parallel between what's happened in Great Britain to what is happening here. And I'm going to ask you, do you believe what's happened in Great Britain is going to help Donald Trump in his crusade to lock down our borders and to win this election?
I think it might. I think, because like I said, I think that there's a lot of parallels of the feelings and the sentiments of the British people. Compare it to what's going on right here, right now in America. And it really doesn't take – it's not rocket science to figure out why Donald Trump is where he is at. Regardless of all of the infighting and things like that within the Republican Party, the majority of Americans, they are tired of people sneaking across our southern border. There might as well not even be a border there right now. And it's not just – for anybody who thinks that it's just Mexicans and people from Central and South America coming in through that border, newsflash, they've found prayer rugs and other sorts of paraphernalia, shall we say, along that southern border. And it's no secret around the world how porous that southern border is and how easily it can be for terrorists and other people who wish to do America harm, how easy it is for them to sneak in.
You know, I think that when the voters who voted 52-48%, that's significant, and won by 4% to leave the Union, don't you think the British people, when they looked about what's happened here at San Bernardino and recently our Orlando, do you think that those terrorist attacks were factors in the way they voted?
You know, it's possible. I mean, Britain has seen its own share of terrorist attacks. We saw the one in Paris. We saw the one in Brussels, right there. I think that, so I think that definitely there could be some of that going on. And, again, it's people who want to, they want to keep the borders of their nation intact. And also another thing that you can hear talked about, on at least on the internet, is, and it's happening here as well down on in border states, a lot of border states, that there are certain areas of London, certain areas of the city that they call no-go zones. And what that is that there are it's a Muslim neighborhood, it's a Muslim area of the city, and if you are a non-Muslim, it's probably to your advantage not to go there. And there's a lot of law enforcement that refuses to go there. Same thing is going on on the southern border right now.
Mm-hmm.
There are areas of New Mexico, Arizona, places like that where law enforcement, Border Patrol and other law enforcement will tell American citizens not to go to that part of the state.
Mm. Yes. I was going to mention to you, when you mentioned that part of London, they actually have, that is, Muslims have Sharia patrols in London where they will go into these parks and start to enforce Sharia law. They will see women that aren't wearing hijabs. They'll start approaching them and confronting them. And it's amazing that it's hands off. They can get away with this.
Exactly. And that is precisely, I think, probably one of the biggest things that passed this referendum, is that more British citizens are seeing that and they're saying, hey, wait a minute, this is our country, this is our society. If you come here to live, we welcome you to come in here. If you're willing to assimilate and become part of our culture and become part of our society and be a contributing member to that society by being employed and whatever else you want to include in that. And none of that is happening. These people have no intention of assimilating into British society, American society, or any other society. I think, and a lot of other people tend to think, and again, maybe it sounds like a lot of black helicopter conspiracy theory stuff, but the ultimate goal is not to assimilate, it's to take over, it's to take control.
Yes, we see that so much and so often here. I'm a big proponent of refugees. I work with Iranians. I want to see them come to a safe home away from an oppressive government. And most Iranians that come here assimilate to our culture. They are good citizens, and they have found a much better place to live. And so assimilation is vital. Now, I want to bring up an issue with you. In fact, this is a true story. You, of course, know it. I had a confrontation the other day at my place of employment with a person who said that because of all of the things that are happening with all of the immigration issues and everything, that in her opinion, she said Donald Trump is a racist because he wants to build this wall. He wants to shut down radicals from coming in. And is Donald Trump really a racist, as my friend claimed, or what is your view on that?
Well, my first response to that would be, first of all, okay, if that's what you think, then give me some examples of how he's a racist. And people, you know, that word right anymore is just it's lost any of its power. It's lost any of its oomph because we throw it around at will, at random. So that would be my first response, to say, well, if Donald Trump is racist, then give me an example of how he's a racist. And a lot of times people will bring up the comments that he made about the Hispanic judge in the Trump University case. You know, I think probably what happened in that case is that maybe what he wanted to say kind of came out wrong. We've all had those moments. I most certainly have had them. But again, if you want to talk about racism, and if it's racist to build a wall, the southern border of Mexico with Guatemala, they have the biggest honkinest wall there is. It's a pretty good size. It's a well built wall. So does that mean that Mexicans are racist against Guatemalans because they have a wall on their southern border? And the other thing I would encourage that person to do would be to look up, because we have something called the internet now, which is pretty much how you can look up just about anything you want to look up. Look up immigration laws in Mexico, and then talk to me about racism.
Exactly, and you brought up the thing about a wall. Does that make does that make Mexicans racist? Last time I looked, the Vatican has a wall. Does that mean the Vatican is
exactly
racist?
Right.
So this
there's a lot of places in the world with walls.
Yeah, so I mean, this argument kind of falls apart. It's once again the left media demonizing someone like Donald Trump, who is wanting to make America great again, who wants to protect his country. I think he loves his country. And so I do see a parallel going on here with Great Britain, and what's going on in this election is going to factor so much. His opponent, of course, Hillary Clinton, is all for Syrian refugee influx. Come in. I can't see how voters are going to go in that direction when they see what's happened in Great Britain. I think voters are going to say Hillary's message is dangerous.
Well, I think that if you spend 5 or 10 minutes taking a really good look at what is going on in Great Britain today, because of they're kind of reaping what they've sown, because they've invited these migrants in for years and years, you know, because like anybody else, and Republicans and Democrats here in the United States they're all guilty of it, of wanting cheap labor. And so years and years have gone on that they have invited people like this to come in and work, but now it's getting to the point where their nation is being overrun. And yeah, I think it does help Donald Trump, because you know Hillary Clinton's own track record is a whole nother show hour, but
yes,
the fact that she would encourage all of these people to come into the country, and we have absolutely no way of vetting these people. We have no way of finding out who they are and why they're here. And you know, in light of things like the terrible shooting in Orlando and San Bernardino, and first of all, for anybody who thinks that those two things are the end, again, you're sadly mistaken. Those two attacks are just the tip of the iceberg. So why on earth would you want to encourage a large number of people from this area of the world that you have no way to find out who they are and why they want to come?
And Donald Trump pointed out that he's seen pictures of these refugees, and the majority of them are young men.
Exactly. Where are the women and children? That would be my first question.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, you're right.
Oh,
you know,
I just want to say real quickly that I don't think that any reasonable Americans are against legal immigration. Absolutely not. We want people to come to America legally and enjoy the benefits of liberty and freedom that we all who are already here enjoy. But the operative word there is legally. And we have to, in this day and age, an age of terrorism, we have to know who they are.
Well, I completely agree with you. I'm all for refugees coming in. My work with Iranians is very personal to me. I really care for them, and I know that they come in legally. I know there are many of them that want to come in, and it's a long, drawn-out process. But I agree with you, Becky.
Oh, yeah.
Not just because you're my wife, but because you're smart about this. Come in legally. Let's have a very, very thorough vetting system. Let's prevent these tragedies, and once and for all, gun control is not going to solve the issue. It's going to
be smart
common sense. Smart common sense in vetting people. And I'm sure you have a few comments about how the left will use these tragedies and manipulate them for their own political agenda and gun control.
Well, Chicago of all places, a place with the strictest gun laws in the nation, all you have to do is look at their murder rate to realize that gun control doesn't work. Something that he said has now become famous or rather infamous. One of the things that he said one time, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And the left is expert at that. They will take a crisis such as Orlando and look what they did with it. the House Democrats had their little 25-hour temper tantrum last week, had their little sitting with catered food and blankets and pillows brought in, so those poor little snowflakes wouldn't be uncomfortable while they were sticking it to the man and bucking the system. But and you know, you can talk about a guy like John Lewis, who is an icon of the civil rights era, and he was participating in a sit-in. In order to prevent law-abiding American citizens from exercising their Second Amendment rights, how ironic! But
yes,
while this sit-in was going on, all of these renegade rebel, congressmen and congresswomen, they all had fundraising efforts. There was a video last week of Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. He had a news conference where he showed all these flyers and all these things that were going out as this sit-in was going on, of all the fundraising efforts by these Democrats. So while they were so busy thinking that they were renegades and rebels, they were making money off a tragedy, basically. And not a lot of people know that, but it was definitely going on.
Well, I'm glad that you let our audience know about that, because these are tactics. These are Saul Alinsky tactics, I should say.
Absolutely.
There's a book all about Saul Alinsky, that's a very important book for us conservatives to read, to understand the mindset that they take advantage of these tragedies, which really speaks against really them having so much compassion. Is it really compassion, or
exactly,
is it really fundraising, and is it really furthering an agenda? Well, I want to say thank you so much for spending time this morning on the Cross in the Desert, sharing your insights. And I just want to let our audience know that July 4th is a pivotal day. Red Nation Rising Radio joins
Absolutely.
With that radio network. So we look forward to some very powerful, strong conservative voices now.
Going to be awesome.
Okay. That is my wife, Becky Noble, host of The Conservative Cauldron and a writer for Politichicks. And thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. It's such a pleasure to have my wife on and share her insights. She does such a great job in her blog writing, her reporting, her radio program. It's always nice to have someone else to join me on this program this morning. It's been a treat today. It's really been amazing. Think about it this way. 1776, the Declaration of Independence. We severed our ties from Great Britain. And now Great Britain understands what that felt like, as they severed their ties from the European Union. And as we discussed this morning, it has ramifications for us. I think the people of our nation feel the same way that Great Britain does. They're tired of the political correctness. They're tired of being ruled by the Washington elite. They're tired of seeing their nation destroyed by radical immigrants, radical Islamic immigrants that come here for only one purpose, and that is to kill, not to assimilate. So I think that we have seen, since this happened just last weekend, I think that our country is going to do a lot similar to what Great Britain did. I think they're going to stand up, and with one voice, they're going to say, enough of Washington, enough of the elitism, enough of the political correctness. We're tired of all of that. I feel as though that the only message that's going to resonate with voters, in my opinion, is the message of our borders. The message of our economy and our borders is what people are thinking about all the time as they vote. And I think that that's going to resonate well. It's going to help Donald Trump. It's going to solidify what he's already been saying. That's the message that gained him the popular following here, with voters saying, we want our borders secure. And what happened in Great Britain and their voice, I think, is only going to help him. And so what Hillary is saying and doing is a whole nother program. But let me just say in closing, one of the things that I always point out on my Facebook is the hypocrisy of the left, especially Hillary Clinton. I've said this again, and I'll say it again and again and again. Be informed if you're going to be a voter. Hillary Clinton says, I am the champion for women's rights. Well, that's absolutely false. As I've shown on my Facebook, she accepts donations from Saudi Arabia, which oppresses the women there. They can't drive. They can't really go out without a male guardian accompanying them. So if she's accepting money from Saudi Arabia and Clinton Foundation, why isn't she standing up and being a voice for them? Why? Well, the simple fact is that she's not a voice for the rights of women. Where are the left liberals? when women like Rehane Jabari and others in Iran are suffering and crying out for hope and freedom? Where is their voice for the women in Afghanistan, in Iran, in Iraq, all over the world? I don't see liberals, and I'm speaking of liberal women, speaking up for these women. All of them think about only one thing, and their right to an abortion, their right to do as they want with their body, but they never think about the women suffering in Saudi Arabia and Iran and all over the world. Hillary Clinton is not the voice for women. Let me tell you what, there is a big difference between Hillary and Donald. I'm going to let you do your own research, come to your own conclusions, but be informed as a voter. Don't vote blindly. Don't vote because that's the person in your party. Vote the issues. Vote the qualifications. Why that person should be president. We have a historic election coming up in just a few months. It's historic. It will be life-changing. It will be country-changing. So please be an informed voter. Vote what is right and true and what will make our country great again. I want to thank Vito. I want to thank Sharin. I want to thank Patricia and all my guests in the chat room today. Thank you so much for your support and for coming aboard to listen to The Cross in the Desert. I will see you again on Thursday. God bless you all. Have an incredible week.
Faithful lightning of his head.